Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When Ryan says when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Ride with John Pollock and Waiting. The A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Ride for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Ride for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way take the mic.
Hello everybody, it's John Pollock and Waiting coming at you for the fourth day in a row.
You're right.
We were here on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's Monday. Way is already counting down until Tuesday when he does not have to talk to me. What will you do with a full day without John Pollock?
You know what? Maybe listen back to recordings of John Pollock as he talks to me about wrestling news. What else? It wouldn't feel like a regular day without it.
Well, our voices are aplenty over these past couple of nights. If you want to catch up on it, we have reviews of King and Queen of the Ring and AEW All Out. AEW Double or Nothing. That's the one we watched on Sunday night. Dude, these AEW shows, like, I need like almost a day to recover. I went to sleep last night like 3:30-ish in the morning. And then was up at like 8 and was just, didn't even feel like I slept last night. I mean, it was just.
Did you get a chance to sleep a little bit more, to catch up during the day?
I tried to grab some sleep before Raw.
Good.
And then apparently this Savannah crowd also found some time to sleep during the show as well. So,
yeah. Well, maybe they watched the pay-per-view. They were up late too.
They could have been. Could have been a lot of Double or Nothing viewers. But, you know, sometimes it's there's just too much booked on one AEW show. You got to spread it out over two nights, and that is why we have an announcement to make, and we have the ultra secret footage. It has been secured. The security footage of the announcement has been procured. Waiting, hit the play button. Joining us now, as they are coming off of Double or Nothing as well, Poison Rana's own Braden Harrington and Davey Portman joining Way and myself, and they are going to be joining us because breaking news here on our post-wrestling Double or Nothing review, there will in fact be a cash-in on Saturday, July the 6th in Toronto. Davey, tell us more.
Oh, yes, there will be. Yes, July 6th in Toronto, we are taking over Yuck Yucks. It is the most famous comedy club in Toronto, and we're going to be doing some stand-up. We're doing some stand-up podcasting. It's going to be post-wrestling, Poison Rana. If you were at Forbidden Poor last year, you kind of know what to expect, and we're going to try and amp it up even more to get you ready for Money in the Bank. We're going to be having a live Q&A with John and Way. We're going to be playing some games. Who knows, we might even attempt some comedy ourselves and a bit of improv. We would love to see as many of you there as possible. Doors at 2 o'clock. The show starts at 2:30. We'll be wrapping up around 6. You'll have plenty of time to get to Scotiabank Arena for Money in the Bank. But we're reuniting. The four of us, we're going to be together, and we are cashing in.
That's the cash-in is what we're calling it.
The cash-in is, in fact, what we are going with here. And tickets are available now, so you can head on over to postwrestling.com/live. Grab your tickets. Ensure your seat at the cash-in on Saturday, July 6th. And, of course, there, live and in living color, will be the one, thankfully the only, Braden Harrington. to meet and greet with all of the fine post-wrestling and Poison Rana folks, the life of the party himself.
Oh, yes. It's time to put your money where our mouths are. Wait, I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but we will be seeing green on July 6th. We might be smoking it a little too, because it's going to be Yuck Yucks in Toronto. We're going to yuck yuck all day, all night long before Money in the Bank. I know there's people out there who are coming down to Toronto for the big wrestling event, and we're going to start the day off by having some wrestling comedy games, like Davey said. We're going to have it all. We're going to have wrestling drink specials, prizes, games. It's going to be a fun time. So come hang out all day long. We are going to be there from like 2 to 6 on the Saturday. And like you said, it's only like 15 minutes from the venue. And then we're going to go watch some ladder matches. So climb your own ladder and get your tickets now. Join us on July 6th. Look at that. Way's got the little thing there. Look, 15-minute walk for you fast walkers, maybe 17 for the normal walkers. But that's pretty close to the venue. And I can't wait. This is going to be a whole another party, another level. Just like last year, we kick things up a notch, and this time we're going to be laughing all the way to the bank.
So come join all of us on Saturday, July the 6th. It's always a lot of fun when we put these shows together, and you get to meet a ton of other Poison Rana and post-wrestling listeners. Again, it's happening at Yuck Yucks, which is one of the premier comedy clubs in all of Toronto, 224 Richmond Street West. And again, tickets are on sale now. postwrestling.com/live. So grab your ticket or else you might be bankrupt on July 6th if you don't make it to the cash in.
I like it. I like it a lot. I hope to see everyone there. This is going to be great.
So there you go. The lost footage from our Double or Nothing review on
coming off
the
Double
night.
Or Nothing. John,
when I tell you, I logged off of our show last night, like, there was legit anger at myself. I was furious with myself, and no one to blame but myself.
It's okay. It's fine.
And then Wade tore me apart afterwards. You should have heard the words coming out of his mouth.
I was Chad Gable-ing you. Yeah, John felt really bad yesterday, and like it was this, and also the Nord ad that we got that one at the very end, but it was lovely to see your reaction at least. And I mean, we could have played it yesterday. I don't think it matters. You know, we already sold several tickets. So thank you to people who already purchased early. But yeah, like we always have a great time whenever we put on one of these events. And I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of you guys, hopefully Money in the Bank weekend in Toronto.
Yes. So find out all the information. Your tickets are available. postwrestling.com/live. We hope to see many of you there if you're in Toronto or coming in for Money in the Bank. As we mentioned in the spot there, it's about a 15-minute walk to the Scotiabank Center. So very close. You can come check out the show, then grab some food, go to Money in the Bank. Yuck Yucks is a great establishment to check out. So looking forward to doing this show, and we'll have plenty of events happening, including a Q&A with Waiting and myself at the cash-in.
I hear from a certain Davey Portman that there might be some wrestling improv going on. And is this going to be perhaps your participation, improv veteran that you are, John?
I didn't know about wrestling improv till they mentioned it in that spot there. So we will see. I will. Okay. I can't plan anything in advance.
No, you certainly cannot. But I would look forward to that very much.
Okay. Grab your tickets, and we will be reminding people over the next couple of weeks before the cash in. But tonight we are going to be talking about Raw as well as several news items, but want to give some alerts out there to what is coming up this week on the site. For Post Wrestling Cafe members, Waiting and I are going to be getting together later on this week for one of our editions of Talk. So that's going to be coming out on Thursday. What we will be discussing, I don't know, but I'm looking forward to this show because I don't have to remember anything or plan out anything in advance. We will be improvising this coming Thursday on Pollock and Ting Talk. But that is not all, because several interesting shows this week, including a special edition of the Long and Winding Royal Road will be dropping on Saturday. Daniel Makabe, who's on his final countdown as one of Brian Danielson's requested opponents, he will be joining WH Park this coming Saturday. The Long and Winding Royal Road, as they are sitting down and traveling back to May of 1992 for Doug Furness and Dan Crawford against Yoshi Kikuchi and Kenta Kobashi. An incredible tag match, and anytime you get a chance to hear from Daniel Makabe and breaking down Japanese wrestling, do yourself a favor and check out this show. And WH will be busy this week because they're also going to be going back to the year 2000 with the start of their chronicling of all the X-Men films. WH and Rich Van, starting with X-Men number one. I had to make sure that this was the proper graphic and the proper movie by messaging WH today, because God knows if I had the wrong X-Men origin film here. I assume this was the right one from 2000.
It is. Yeah, you found it. Yeah.
These franchises like restart every 5 years. So I was hoping this was the correct one, but this is what happens when you leave it to me.
This will be a free show, actually, that we're going to be putting out for everybody. They are actually started last week reviewing Days of Future Past. So you can listen to that one if you're a Post Wrestling Cafe patron. They will be reviewing an X-Men movie for every single week in the lead up to Deadpool and Wolverine's release later on in July. So a lot of MCU later, including, of course, the MCU news, which is a great segment every single week. But this week you get it for free.
All right, the whole schedule is up at postwrestling.com. We'll have other reminders throughout the week, but all the usual staples coming at you this week and, of course, on postwrestlingcafe.com. New month will be kicking off, and on Wednesday this week, we will be announcing a special series of shows we'll be doing on the cafe throughout the month of June. So we can only fit in so many announcements, but John Pollock has a big announcement for Wednesday. That's the graphic.
The announcements never end.
No, we got to pace these out. And I might completely forget this on Wednesday. So there's a chance we'll be talking about it on Monday.
We'll get to it at some point. Yeah.
AEW, we're going to just circle back to Double or Nothing and the press conference that was held afterward. Wade, did you get to see any or all of the press conference?
I saw and listened to all of it, yes. Mm-hmm.
So having watched almost all of these press conferences, I assume you have, and in your free time, you also sit down and rewatch some of these press conferences.
Oh, sure. Yes.
What struck you about this one? Just anything notable? Renee has been utilized more and more of the host. But this was one, like, they really kept, like, the talent down to 3-4 questions, very brief. And I've got to say, this was an extension of the media call last week. Like Tony Khan, like, there were some bits of information here, but I wouldn't say, like, there were any big headlines. But what did you take out of the press conference?
I definitely noticed like a quicker pace to the press conference this time as well. And maybe that had something to do with the fact that we were already like 6 hours deep into the evening for a lot of people. A lot of the people that were there, the Bucks set themselves, they've been there since 9:30 in the morning. So that might have been partly due to it. Maybe there's just a certain desire to, you know, get these moving so that you have the interactions that you want for or the feature spotlight for the talents that you want without maybe getting into too much, like, I don't know, too much questioning from members of the media. I'm not really sure, but they felt cognizant to keep the thing moving at a good pace. I didn't think it was like a must see type of press conference as like many AEW press conferences had been, but it was like a good chance to like see Mercedes Moné speak, you know, about her victory and just kind of speak maybe more at length about like her employment in AEW. Spoke a lot about, you know, how certain audiences still think WWE is the only place where you can wrestle, and she was here to prove that wasn't the case. Like, I'm listening to that, I'm thinking, I feel like that was like, you know, a conversation point maybe 5 years ago, but I feel like we're way past that. But I'm also reminded maybe a lot of Mercedes Moné's fans are following her to AEW for the first time, and they might actually have that feeling. Beyond that, I continue to be really impressed by the way Swerve Strickland handles himself and his just like status of what it means to be a leader of this company. He feels very much like it when you hear him speak like this. And that's sort of like the type of tone I wish they could translate even that much more to his on-screen character. He comes across really well as a representative of this company. Toni Storm did her thing. Like, I find it tremendously entertaining, but it might not be to everybody's taste, but I really appreciate and recognize like the amount of creativity she puts into like her whole routine. Did not answer any questions, but, you know, gave you full of, to me, like entertainment value.
It's one thing to put your match together, quite another to find some time for some erotic fan fiction to also author.
She put some work into this. Either that or AI, but maybe it was her.
Yeah, it might not have been a must-see press conference, but there was definitely a moment when, for Hiroshi Tanahashi, it was must-pee, and he had to literally get up and go piss. I felt so bad for this guy, because he, by his own admission, he could not understand any of the English that was being asked. I think he was just there as this kind of united front that we have Forbidden Door coming up, but I mean, he couldn't answer anything. He had no idea what was being asked. The guy was just sitting there for the whole press conference, essentially, with Tony Khan. And I just felt bad for this guy. He was just like, could you imagine just being in this scenario? You don't know what's happening. And you've got to pee. He was probably being very polite and finally just had to get up and leave.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, they obviously, you know, a way to promote Forbidden Door coming up as the next thing. But yeah, kind of awkward. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Tony Khan was asked about more titles. And while he was asked about women's tag titles or women's trios belts, he said he's considering the idea of mixed tag titles. Cool. Why not? That's it.
Listen, like, when it comes to championships, yes, like, we constantly have the discussion that AEW has a whole lot, like, maybe too much. But I will say, like, I'm open to it as long as they will be booked effectively, as long as they are, you know, tools to help further stories and compelling stories. The argument is there that, like, you know, what TV time do you have anyway? Let's say for the women's, you know, division, enough to warrant trios championships. I'm not sure, but they can prove us wrong with effective booking.
He was asked about MJF and just stating MJF is here for the long haul. No MJF at the press conference.
Didn't really answer the question of, like, exactly when he was signed. He kind of sidestepped that.
Yeah, he confirmed that Athena is banged up, but stated she's expected to be back soon. There was no update as of Sunday night about Adam Copeland. There was a very scary spot on the show where he did this leap off the top of the cage that most people have probably seen by now. And he was certainly after the match, he was limping pretty significantly up the ramp. And we'll see what the status was. But it in real time looked frightening. And that was about it. I mean, Swerve was asked about, you know, for a while, he's been trying to get Floyd Mayweather Jr. to attend one of these, finally did on Sunday. It was pretty straightforward.
Swerve was almost hinting at, like, further involvement from the Money team with AEW.
Yeah, which, I mean, in another era, maybe that would be something. I don't know. AEW has not had, when it comes to combat sports athletes coming over, whether it's been Paige Van Zandt or Jorge Masvidal, usually there's a good start off angle, and then doesn't really. Mike Tyson, like, they really haven't been able to get there. Shaq, at least they got the match out of.
You're right.
Which was more than we could get with Masvidal and Jericho or anyone. But
let's work on Rick Ross first, okay?
Well,
him back.
I think he's at, like, a pretty relevant stage at the moment, coming off this whole issue with Kendrick and Drake. Don't you feel
he
like
was sort of a side character? Not really.
Well,
that's involved.
He'll take it. But yeah, no Rick Ross sighting of late. When it comes to the television negotiations, so Khan was asked about it during the press conference, didn't give much of a substantive answer, but Justin Barrasso interviewed him going into Double or Nothing. And from Justin Barrasso's piece, he wrote that, this was Tony Khan's comment in the article. For everyone who cares about AEW all over the world, we're in a great position. This is going to work out really well for AEW. We're having great talks, and people should feel very confident about what that means for the wrestlers, the staff, and the fans. As a result of everyone's hard work and endless support from the fans, there will be a tremendous deal for AEW. The outlook for the company is so bright moving forward. And Justin Barrasso, this is not Tony Khan, this is Justin Barrasso stating this, noting that their agreement ends at the end of the year, and there are strong indications that the two sides will announce a new deal before their exclusive negotiating window closes. So that is Justin Barrasso's reporting. And if that were to be the case, it would have to signal that Warner Brothers Discovery is going to make such an offer to AEW that they are going to avoid taking this to the market. We know that Tony Khan has stated many, many times that he is extremely loyal to Warner Brothers Discovery. And that's not just lip service. As we saw when we heard about the CW having interest in ROH, he did not even go in that direction with ROH. So that was a tangible deal that possibly could have been made for ROH, and he did not opt to go outside of there. So there is that loyalty factor, but obviously this is going to be the major story for AEW. It's the biggest deal for AEW, and with Warner Brothers Discovery, every day seems to be another analysis of what is going to happen with TNT, and I mean Dynamite as well. Like, do you flip Dynamite back to TNT, which might need the programming if NBA is gone? They're going to have a lot of savings if there's no NBA to be spending for. But I think until that NBA picture is figured, I just don't know if there is going to be. I mean, they could always finalize an AEW deal, but there's so many questions until you know for sure where these NBA rights are going after next season. And remember, they still have another season of NBA on TNT.
Right. You know, not to say AEW is anywhere near the level of like what an NBA represents for Warner, but the prospect of Warner losing both the NBA and AEW to competition, I think is, you know, would look very dire for the company. So I could see them scrambling to perhaps wanting to really retain AEW at the moment because of just, you know, everything it can provide to fill in those gaps. And because of like the considerable value that I think that property still represents, you know, as it translates to ratings. And I think obviously Tony more than understands this and is probably looking for to use all that leverage to get the deal he wants. I mean, it is the path of least resistance for him, for the audience. I'm sure he would genuinely prefer sticking around if he can, of course, you know, get the right deal.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be like, if we go with the path that they get this big deal and it's enough that they are well into profitability, they get the desired deal. Like, how much does that change the presentation of this company? How does, like, Tony Khan is selling you a product because he is not at the promised land yet. And I compare it a lot to covering Dana White when, even once they had gotten on Spike, they had gotten onto Fox, they were still selling this sport to a lot of skeptical media, skeptical generations of fans that just did not understand this product. And they were so careful about their image, their athletes, and then they made it to the quote unquote promised land. And now it's sold. It is a sport that is indoctrinated worldwide. And look at Dana White, look at the UFC. It's like they do not have to necessarily be tiptoeing around their image. They're very, like, it's just Dana White of today versus Dana White of even 6-7 years ago. Yes, you always had the really, you know, over.
You could argue, though, this is an image created to cater to like a different marketing base.
It is catering to a different audience, but it's also sort of just, like, they are now solidified. And if AEW gets this next big deal, they are really solidified. If they sign this next 5-year deal and it's no longer just fighting for that big rights deal to get to profitability. So I think it'll be really fascinating to see like what kind of projection you're seeing from AEW a year from now, 18 months from now, if they do in fact get this big deal. And if they don't, and then it would be a very different company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Few other notes here, just some small ones. Mark Henry announced on a Busted Open Radio today that his contract with AEW is up Tuesday. He is not renewing with the company. He is calling this a mutual decision between the two parties. He is not leaving the industry, but is going to be focusing more on his own website and brand. And while Mark Henry has not really had an on-screen presence beyond teeing up the Rampage main events, he has been heavily involved in like the community relations and mentoring a lot of talents. important things that I think you want to be establishing your roots of as a company. And Mark Henry has always gotten like great praise for his ability, not just in those departments, but also the recruitment level at WWE and talents that he was able to spot and bring in. So, you know, someone that had, you know, notable contributions. And I guess the natural question is, he's not leaving the wrestling industry. Is there going to be a position for him elsewhere with a WWE or something in that kind of scouting development role that he was doing at? And remember, when he left WWE, it was, you know, it was the Vince McMahon regime. And now it's a totally different company in that sense.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what his next move is. I mean, I believe he said something to the effect of like wanting to focus on his website. Like, what does that mean? You know, like what exactly is MarkHenry.com going to offer? I guess an already very cluttered like wrestling experience for most
people.
He's
going to start breaking some news. Maybe that's what he's going to focus on.
Sure, why not? I mean, he's already got, you know, kind of one foot in the door through Busted Open, right? So, yeah, I mean, I imagine like maybe in the years to come, we'll have that much of a clearer picture of what he actually offered AEW beyond what we saw once a week with him teeing up it's time for the main event. But I'm sure he leaves a bit of a void for a lot of people in the back.
Julia is going to be undergoing surgery. Tokyo Sports reports that she was having surgery on Tuesday. So, I mean, she may have already had the surgery by the time we're speaking at the moment, given the time difference. But she broke her wrist last Monday on the Marigold show in the main event tag, teaming with Utami against Saray and Bozilla. And she is scheduled to headline Marigold's first pay-per-view July 13th. So I guess we will find out what the timetable is for this recovery if she's able to be back by July 13th. And of course, people had, you know, there's also been the speculation if she would be part of that Heatwave show, which is the weekend before the Marigold pay-per-view as well. Like, will she maybe want to be showing up at the cash-in as well? I mean, these are all questions.
Did you get a ticket? She better act fast.
Postwrestling.com/live. No comps. Okay. Yeah,
that's right.
Anyway, so hopefully she has a quick recovery from the broken wrist. And PW Insider is reporting Eddie Kingston is now set for surgery on his ACL and meniscus tear July the 8th. From last week, they had noted he's got the leg break, has to recover first. Then he can go for the knee surgery and will be out around 10 months after that. So, I mean, does have at least a surgery date right now. And the best of the Super Juniors, they are going to the former home of WH Park, Numazu, on Tuesday for a four-tournament match show with Dragon Daya against Ninja Mac, Doki versus Kushida, Taiji Ishimori versus Sho, and Hiromu Takahashi against Drilla Maloney. And this is the last week of the round-robin matches where the A-block, everyone has one more round-robin match with Titan, Hayata, Blake Christian, and Desperado tied with 10 points. Clark Connors, TJP, and Kevin Knight with 8 points. And then in the B block, it's Eagle, Sho, Hiromu, and Taiji Ishimori all tied with 10. Beneath them, Drilla Maloney, Kushida, and Doki with 8 points. I'm thinking towards the final here. I am leaning towards it being a Desperado-Hiromu final. I think if you're headlining Dominion, you're going to be going with your big guns. And I cannot imagine it not being Hiromu. And I would say Desperado would be probably his best dance partner to have for a show that you have to headline Osaka Joe Hall with.
What's been your favorite match so far?
Ooh, there was an amazing El Desperado Kosei Fujita match. On the weekend, on Sunday's card, there was a match between Hiromu Takahashi and Robbie Eagles that I thought was really great. The last two matches of Sunday's show, it was Hiromu and Eagles that went about 22 minutes, which if you enjoy watching like limb work on the knee, I got a lot of knee selling on this past weekend's shows, but that was the best one. And then the main event was El Desperado and TJP, and both of those matches I would recommend pretty highly. So there's been some really great performances in this Best of the Super Juniors. Like Kosei Fujita was just, he came out of the gate and I'm like, this is going to be a career making tournament for this guy. And I can't, he has not been booked to have the big breakthrough tournament, but nor he has kind of subsided as the tournament has continued, but he had a really hot start. And the Desperado match was an incredible match that they had on one of the opening, one of the first nights of the tournament as well. But they will have shows on Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. The block finals are next Monday, and then the finals headlining on June 9th on the same card as Evil and Jon Moxley.
All right.
Final things for NXT on Tuesday night, we have qualifiers for the women's North American title match at Battleground. Meechan takes on Tatum Paxley, and Ren Sinclair faces Kalani Jordan. Trick Williams will team with Javon Evans against Mark Coffey and Wolfgang of Gallus. Ridge Holland versus Riley Osborne. Ridge Holland, who not even the man behind Cruz Del Toro's latest injury, so he doesn't even have that to his resume. Roxanne Perez's opponent for Battleground will be announced, and rapper Sexy Red will be appearing.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be confused with Amazing Red. And then Wednesday's Dynamite, all we know so far is the Casino Gauntlet match. Just under 4,700 tickets out, according to WrestleTix. So I would call that fine. It's not great. It's not terrible. It's fine for the Kia Forum. But we will see coming off the pay-per-view. And in particular, I would say like the biggest thing would be announcing like an MJF appearance on this show to see if his appearance would move tickets over the last 48 hours. But I'm sure we'll get some announcements over the next day or two for the follow-up show, and they've got 4 weeks until their next pay-per-view, so the Forbidden Door show will probably be coming together pretty quickly.
What New Japan cameos may we start seeing as of this week?
Yeah, I mean, all the heavyweights are, you have some undercard stuff going on, but pretty much like all of them are off tour at the moment because of the Super Juniors, so you could have people popping up. They already hinted that there will probably be some international names in this gauntlet match on Wednesday.
Right, yeah, not to mention CMLL and, well, not in the gauntlet, but Stardom Interaction as well.
Mm-hmm. So it should be an interesting show on Wednesday night. Raw tonight was an interesting show from Savannah, Georgia at the N Market Arena. They announced this as a sellout, 6,700 tickets out, according to WrestleTix. And tonight they were going up against Game 4 of the Celtics and Pacers series and Game 3 of the Stars and Oilers series in the NHL playoffs. And the Celtics swept the Pacers tonight. So what that means is there will not be a Game 5 on Wednesday night for Dynamite. They will not have to face the NBA on Wednesday. So Boston doing them a solid.
You know, a lot of Mercedes Moné fans, I guess.
That must be the connection. Mm-hmm. Ludwig Kaiser is in the ring to introduce Gunther, and they discussed the controversy of Randy's shoulder being up and Paul Levesque stating that the referee's decision is final. Gunther walks out. He is holding the crown. He is not wearing the crown, and the crowd starts chanting for Orton, and Gunther brags about beating Randy, and he is the rightful king of the ring who will get the shot at SummerSlam. And then he turns his attention to Damian Priest, who he notes has stepped up after Rhea Ripley's injury, just like I did, step up as the IC champion to become its greatest champion. It lacked prestige, just like this King of the Ring tournament lacked prestige, and he had to raise its profile. He's going to do the same now to the World Heavyweight title, which is lacking prestige, after Damian Priest took a shortcut to win this title. So Damian has heard enough. He comes out alongside Finn Balor and JD McDonagh. Priest points out, you did not beat Randy Orton. You proved nothing. And then he explains the concept of the Money in the Bank briefcase, that I earned this briefcase and that's how this works. I got to cash in. And Gunther has been waiting for someone to teach him anything since I've arrived, because I don't know much about business, but what I do know is about this sport, and no one can teach me anything inside of this ring. Next out was Drew McIntyre, who runs down CM Punk, stating that the highlight of Punk's return so far has been getting injured by me, because if not, he would have screwed up by now and been fired. And he takes issue with these two because it's an irrelevant discussion, because I'm going to be champion in 3 weeks. Gunther just takes his cue and gets out of here. He's done with this segment. So Drew is left with Priest and explains that Priest is spreading himself too thin. Ever since Rhea Ripley left, the Judgment Day has been a mess. He mentions other European-based wrestlers like Fit Finlay, Wade Barrett, and the British Bulldog, none of whom won the world title like him. And he explains that here in the U.S., they don't teach you geography. And the crowd got very upset at this. So he explains where Scotland is in relation to Wales and England, and that Scotland has the most passionate people in the world. Priest is walking into a war zone, and they're going to break you mentally. And Priest just laughs this off as if getting booed is going to rattle him, and then asks Drew, is your wife going to be there? And Drew gets pissed as Priest proves, I can get on your skin too. And then we get Braun Strowman running out. And at this point, let's pause for Way's thoughts on 50 different speeches and interactions here to start off the show. This was a whole procession of verbal jousting.
This is a little casino gauntlet for Damian Priest himself here. You know, first of all, I thought, man, I really want Gunther to wear that crown. They're just teasing us. He's walking out with it. He's holding it by his waist and it's just like got that, you know, very nicely cut and waxed, you know, head of hair. But I'm just begging for that crown to go on. And at this point, I don't think we're going to get it. You know, tonight would have been the night for Kaiser to like put it on his head and it's not happening. So the man
hasn't been a man that fits a crown since Big E. Until now with Gunther.
Yeah, yeah. You know, he must really not want to mess up his hair, which is understandable. But he sounded great here in a little exchange with Damian Priest. This is the first time we're really kind of seeing Gunther as part of like the world title conversation. And I don't know if there's somebody who's ever transitioned better from an IC title level to a world title level as Gunther. He fits like a glove, fits like a crown, you know, if only he would put it on. But it's been a seamless transition from being an IC title guy to a top level guy for Gunther. I thought Priest did really well overall. You know, he was having to basically verbally joust with Gunther and also with Drew McIntyre, you know, two very established guys at this point. And I think he's holding his own against everybody. The confidence is there. The presence is there. The smoothness of delivery is there. I wouldn't say he's as quite unique of a personality right now as either Drew or Gunther, but he's still doing enough to impress me in this sort of spotlight. And it just tells me that there's an even higher level for Priest to reach. So I continue to love the amount of thought that Drew's putting into his promos. He has substantial arguments for everything he says. And here he reminded us that he's like, you know, the most successful UK wrestler in this company's history, at least by accolade. And that Clash at the Castle in Scotland will be an immense home field advantage for him because they don't call them psychopaths in Scotland. They're just because everybody's a psychopath.
Well, I thought Damian Priest sounded very good here. And did you take anything from this? They brought up the Randy Orton stuff, but it's not like they were really hitting you over the head towards a rematch. I guess they could push that more. I was curious if they were going to have like Randy show up here and set up that rematch right away, because it would make sense
I think in the video, like Hunter said, that Randy has to like go through his injuries first. I really don't think that they were planning on doing the rematch. I mean, it really did feel like it was a botch, and that they might've not had any intention of, you know, having that sort of controversial finish. So I think he said something to the effect of like Randy eventually will get that rematch. But in the meantime, Priest has like four different programs lined up already, including one with Strowman that is a bit more long-term here.
So when it comes to European wrestlers, though, that have held the world championship, was there an omission by Drew McIntyre?
What was the omission?
I will channel the great Jamesy, Kane from Spain.
He did say UK.
Did he say UK?
Oh, I thought he said UK.
Okay, not European. No. Anyway, there you go.
But still very, very
an all time classic post wrestling moment of all an all timer from Jamesy. Mm-hmm. So that ended this segment and takes us to Braun Strowman and JD McDonagh. As Strowman grabs him and just is throwing him around, overpowering JD, splashes him in the corner. Finally, JD clips the knee, and this forces Braun to have to hobble on the around the ring. He's limping, and he still does his run around the ring while limping. I now have a new selling pet peeve that erases the kip up. It's the I'm gonna sprint around the ring on my one leg. He looked ridiculous doing this limp deal, which miraculously he made a full recovery by the final segment of the show.
Well, injuries hurt the most at the time of impact, right? Okay, you know, this is a 3-hour show, John. I'm not sure if you're aware, you know, that's a long time.
I don't know. Adam Copeland seemed to be like he did that dive and went another 10 minutes. It seemed like it was afterwards that he was feeling the effects of it. So I don't know.
It's adrenaline, I guess. Yeah.
Well, it continued here. So he's limping around on the ring. Balor gets onto the apron to distract and he's thrown into the ring. Carlito shows up. He's knocked down by Braun. So JD hits a flying headbutt and again chop blocks the knee. and goes for a tilt-a-whirl, which Braun counters into a power slam, pinning JD in 9 minutes and 33 seconds. Braun then gets rid of Balor and Carlito, and JD comes from behind with a chair that Braun no-sells, swats it away, and then chases Judgment Day on his one leg to the back. Braun selling was my my favorite part of this. I mean, he was running around like he was like an android or something.
Well, what are you gonna do? You wanted to chase the guy down, had one bad leg. You know, I thought he did a good job, and I thought this was an entertaining match. Strowman is fun to watch doing these sort of squash matches, and JD is really great in the role. But it wasn't just a typical squash match. I thought they did enough to put Strowman in danger to make it a bit more interesting. We're using the knee injury and using Judgment Day getting involved. Strowman seems to be being set up for Priest right now, and having him go through the rest of the Judgment Day is an effective way of reintroducing him in a large role on Raw.
Yeah, I think that they've set up about 8 opponents for Damian Priest that he's got ready to go. Kathy Kelly is with Liv Morgan, who has no remorse for Becky and how she lost the title. She says she did not know Dom was going to be showing up on Saturday, which, I mean, he came up to her at the pre-show and said, "I flew over here to make sure that you will not have the title." So, I mean, she did know he was going to be.
I think she's lying.
Could be lying. So she goes on to state that she does need to beat Becky straight up to be the champion, and she's going to have her first ever steel cage match tonight, and the revenge tour is just getting started. First ever cage match.
Yeah, though, which kind of surprised me. I guess when you think about it, like, maybe the women don't typically get, like, it's only the main event level women who really get those opportunities, but she has been a part of, like, Chamber and special match types like that. So
yeah,
a good confidence from Liv, I felt, in this interview. You know, she's finding a tone of voice that I think is unique to herself, that stands out, and I thought she sounded really good here, better than usual.
Balor asks Carlito why he took so long to get down there. Priest says, well, that didn't work in regards to the plan, and that Braun should have been handled by now, and tells them to go find JD, bring him to the clubhouse after he gets checked out. There was a recap of Braun Breaker's attacks from last week, including to Ricochet. So we go to the trainer's room, and Ricochet has been cleared. He's like, great. Do I get a title match too in Scotland? No. He says he wants Braun tonight. Pierce informs him he's suspended. Braun is not here tonight. So Ilya enters and thanks Ricochet for getting him out of the way last week of that spear. And when he's healthy, I want to have another match with you. Ricochet says, we can do it tonight. I'm in my tights. I'm all ready to go. Ilya says, he calls him broken, and Ricochet explains, I've never been broke, and they are set to go.
I thought this was like a good little pro wrestling trash talk moment between these two. I didn't find it as corny as usual, because I thought there were some pretty good lines. I fight people and break them, but I don't fight broke people. And Ricochet responding, I'm nothing but money. I've never been broke. They sounded way cooler than I did, just recapping. But I thought that, you know, like, it's not always the case with Ricochet, especially in these sort of outings where he comes across kind of cool. But I thought it was cool.
He also signed one of those crazy Lucha Underground contracts, too, back in the day. Remember? They had to go.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ricochet and Ilya Dragunov. I thought this was the best match on the show. Ricochet's got injured ribs, so Ilya hits him with rolling Germans and is just flipping him. All his offense is dropping this guy onto his ribs. And to go to the break, he sends Ricochet to the floor, and this man is chewing on the top rope. This was the most Ilya Dragunov throw to commercial you could come up with. Come back, Constantine Special is stopped with a flying knee, and Ricochet hits a suicide dive, goes for another one, which is caught, and he's driven into the apron, and then kicks off of the post with a moonsault to the floor. Ilya gets out of the way of a 630, hitting the Constantine Special and following with chops. Then Ilya comes off the top, is caught with a super kick, and this great timed recoil for a big near fall by Ricochet. He drops Ilya off the top and connects with a shooting star press. Perfect for the ribs, by the way. Shooting star press.
I really don't get that mad when people, like, who are injured use their bodies to attack. I mean, if a fighter hurts his hands mid-fight, he's still going to have to punch. It's not like he can't punch, you know? Like, you just have to sell it afterwards. And he did. He sold for the shooting star press.
Well, he got up, and boom, the suspended Braun Breaker appears and spears the man in his ribs. And the DQ is called 10 minutes, 33 seconds. Now, this was a great match, but we have a bigger issue to talk about. This man has tanning problems, okay? I'm very worried about this guy. Like, his head, like, no man should have that dark of a complexion from their tanning endeavors as this man is having. I mean, it is, like, it just feels like, did he, what's up with the tanning? Like, he needs to, like, contact someone for some advice here.
He signed to the red brand and, you know, decided to don the colors on his skin. I don't know, man. Like, I guess they say, like, tans look better on TV. He might be taking it a little bit far. He's reaching Hulk Hogan levels, but I don't know. What's the alternative? Sheamus.
Yeah, I mean, we could get that.
Some guys just like the tan. Maybe he just loves the beach.
Well, Ilya chops Braun, so he gets speared as well. The officials are out. Adam Pearce is screaming at Braun, and Braun stops on the aisle, and you think he's going to attack Pearce, which I think is what this is leading up to. He's going to spear Pearce.
Ooh.
I think that's our angle that we're going to be getting to towards at some point. I like what they're doing with Braun here. Like, they are making him like this this guy that is out of Pierce's control, and they're making him feel like a big part of this roster so far. So I would say so far so good. And you've set up matches with this guy with Ricochet and Ilya Dragunov. So I mean, yeah, you're programming this guy with the best available talent on top of it.
This mid card that they're building up on Raw is actually becoming very exciting. And yes, like, it's unfortunate we didn't get a result here to Ricochet versus Ilya Dragunov, but I think the overall effect of this segment is that everybody felt boosted to me. For one thing, I thought Ricochet felt like an incredibly strong babyface in the body of this match, like selling his ribs, gaining a whole lot of crowd support. And Ilya Dragunov, like, in a month, has managed to carve, like, such a great expectation for himself, so that, like, every time he appears on screen, we know it's going to be one of the best matches of the evening. He's showcasing and performing at such a high level right now, and I think the character is really coming across too. He's got feuds going on with these two as well as Gunther in the long term, and that's all done within this month. So it's been very impressive how they've handled him. Braun, I'm actually really impressed at how they've managed to transition him to Raw too, because, like, some people might, like, be sad that the Wolf Dogs aren't happening anymore. This is a better Braun breaker.
Baron is very upset about the what were they called? The Wolf Dogs?
The Wolf Dogs, yeah. This is a better, way more serious Braun breaker than we've seen. They're not letting him, like, really do any talking, which is fine, other than, like, I guess the yelling at about, you know, into the corner, speaking to himself.
He's not a bad talker at all. Like, that's, I don't think they're hiding a deficiency, but it's not needed at this point. This guy doesn't need to be doing long speeches.
It's better that he speaks with those spears. You know, there's no humor whatsoever attached to this gimmick. They're purely ramping up his aggression and intensity. And I thought all three benefited from this whole thing. So I'm looking forward to whatever they're doing with them.
Kathy Kelly is backstage as Pierce is yelling at Braun, and she speculates that maybe Pierce is second-guessing drafting Braun Breaker. And then Kiana James appears, and Pierce goes off to his office with Kiana James, and we never got a follow-up to that of what Kiana James' role is here with Adam Pierce. Earlier in the day, Awesome Truth is out for ice cream, and Miz is all in white, and Truth explains, "This is your flavor, vanilla." And Miz goes to say, "So what's your flavor?" And he says, "Strawberry." And then the New Day walk in and say, "Well, what were you about to say, Miz?" "Yeah, what were you about to say, Miz?" He says, "Strawberry. I was going to say strawberry." And the New Day want tag title shots. And Awesome Truth took off. Karrion Kross came in and turned this around into Xavier Woods is being held back by Kofi. And somehow the end result of this bizarre segment is New Day versus AOP next week. We have to wait for that one.
Yes, we do. Yeah. Well, this was a loaded show, John. You know, you got to build to
AOP. But we still got an AOP match, though. Don't worry. You still got AOP on the show, thankfully. I don't know what Karrion Kross's gimmick is here. I don't really care, but it's whatever. It's This is the best thing he's done so far. It's low praise.
I'll tell you why, okay? This is already it's low praise that this is the best Karrion Kross we've seen in the WWE, and it's because he's not doing the tarot card shit. Like, we're not seeing Scarlett and Karrion Kross with like their what do you call that thing?
What?
The
hourglass.
The hourglass. Thank you. Like, it's not that shit. It's like, it's not him, them speaking in like vague language, threatening at like revealing something that nobody could care about. This is just Karrion Kross like trying to drive a wedge between the New Day. You know, it's a very simple, grounded story of Kross suggesting that Kofi is holding Woods back. That alone is already like getting me way more interested, or at least like it's way better than what he's done. So I mean, it seems like they're teasing possibly a bit of tension between New Day members, and that's a long time coming, you know. So hopefully this is actually going to be something that can benefit both these teams.
AOP against the Creeds, as promised. Rezar hit a running DVD to Brutus in the corner. They beat up on him. Julius gets the tag, and this guy, he just throws these guys around. He's doing his kip-ups, and then a moonsault onto Akam. Like, this guy is just wild to watch. And Julius lifts up Akam on his shoulders when Scarlett sends Ivy Nile into the steps for the distraction. So the Brutus ball is stopped, and AOP hit their finisher, which has now been given the name What a Rush by Paul Ellering, and they win in 3 minutes.
Yeah. Why not just give them the Doomsday Device?
Well, it was funny. It's like the Brutus ball is almost like a variation of the Doomsday Device that they were trying to deliver to them.
Yeah, true. I guess so. I don't know. I if you're going to go for it, this is the new Legion of Doom. Like, just give them
In fairness, the Legion of Doom, like, they destroyed some guys with that Doomsday Device. I don't know if I'd want to be taking that from Akam or Rezar coming off the top and taking my head off.
Yeah, I guess so. They are coming out with shoulder pads. You know, can we start calling
them? Where's Rocco, their little dummy?
Sure, yeah. I'm sure it's in the vault somewhere along with the SmackDown fist. But I'm just going to start calling them like, you know, the authors of Doom. How about that?
The W-E-S.
Legion of Pain, yeah. It was fun seeing Julius toss these big guys around, right?
He's fun to watch in these matches, albeit very quick ones. I think that the Creeds are just in this holding pattern until Gable is going to become their new leader. And I think that group will be I think they will all gel together. But in the meantime, the Creeds are sort of just in no man's land.
They're in a space where like they're going to turn them heel anyway, so they can afford these losses, I guess.
Rey does a promo addressing Carlito, who would still have been his brother if he didn't take this path. He's bitter and says, "You attacked Cruz del Toro. That was a mistake. And you're not going to find an old friend in the ring tonight. You're going to find out what happens when you cross the LWO and when you cross Rey Mysterio." Very frightening words here from Rey. Sheamus comes back. And
He's like the least threatening like promo on this roster. Like he's just the nicest, like at this point, dad, you know? Like that's why he's never been a heel. He's just the most likable guy. So it's kind of hard to be that threatened by Rey. Like, how badly are you really going to beat this guy?
Yeah, I mean, this was it's Rey Mysterio, yeah, but he had to do a semi-threatening promo here for Carlito. His life is in danger tonight. Sheamus comes out in his, I guess his official uniform now. This is his one outfit.
It's the Chris Harrington special.
It is, yeah. I mean,
at least that's what this podcast is going to call it from now on, right?
Yeah, I mean, this guy looks like a weathered, like reporter. You know what I mean? Who's just like
a weathered reporter? Okay,
like he just looks like he's just gotten his buyout
from the 1940s.
He's sick of like where the industry has gone. And this is our background conversation of the night with Liv Morgan and JD McDonough, by the way, which got brought up. So. Mm-hmm.
With
Mr. Chasing. Scoops here missing the story that's right over his shoulder here. This is why this guy's getting phased out. You know, this guy's
a new gimmick for Sheamus.
This is print media Sheamus. Okay, in this
print
digital
media
world,
Sheamus. Okay, so we had Banger Bro Sheamus. We've had Brawling Brute Sheamus. We've had Celtic Warrior Sheamus. Now this is what'd you call it? Print media Sheamus.
Print media Sheamus. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Deadline after deadline.
Ooh.
So Sheamus addresses Ludwig Kaiser for insulting him all of these weeks. Kaiser's on the screen and said, Sheamus never stood a chance in the King of the Ring. You've been hiding at home behind his keyboard. And Sheamus says he goes for Ludwig in the back, but gets ambushed and they brawl into the arena before they are separated. And that match is going to happen next week. So we're going to get it. This is the young AI reporter, Ludwig Kaiser, okay, who doesn't believe in any of the principles of journalism. Okay,
he's a TMZ reporter, and Sheamus is like sort of the classic, like, you know, you go through your sources, you multiple sources. Okay, you sit on your story. You don't harass people in the streets. You get your stories vetted the proper way.
See, this was a metaphor because we went from Sheamus's words and we pivoted to video here with Ludwig.
Ooh, yeah. Okay. I didn't think either promo was all that strong. In fact, like what you just suggested, I'm much more interested in, John, Battle of Generational Reporters. But I'm interested in this match between these two.
They'll have a great match next week, most likely, and they'll probably get at least a segment or so. Hmm. Becky sits down with Lyra, and in the words of John Kavanaugh, you either win or learn. Lyra's like, okay, thanks. Kairi Sane versus Lyra.
No, this is a bit interesting. Okay, she said, yes, we either win or we learn, and we keep learning until it's time to walk away. And obviously, maybe a bit more interesting given our recent reports that she has not signed her contract yet, and that it's, in fact, due in June 1st.
Yes, which is this Saturday. So we'll talk about that more with the main event outcome. But yeah, she did have that line in here. So Lyra has her match with Kairi Sane. They went 4 minutes and 43 seconds. Another short match on this show. I can't say there was much to this. Lyra just sold her ribs, selling the Annihilator from Saturday night. She got hung up in the corner and gets hit with a pair of double stomps as Sane is going after the elbow or going after the ribs and then tries for the insane elbow. But Lyra gets the boots up and covers her with a crucifix, keeping both shoulders down, and wins in 4 minutes and 43 seconds.
Just seemed like they wanted to give Lyra a bit of a rehab win coming off of the Queen of the Ring finals, which, you know, it's good to have her have a bit of on-screen presence following, you know, making it all the way to the finals and having a very impressive match, I thought. But this match wasn't really the type that was all that impressive. You know, Lyra, unfortunately, is still so new that she didn't have much of sympathy from this audience for this particular match. And content-wise, it was really not all that memorable. It did, of course, also serve to set up a Kairi Sane damage control story for later on.
Yeah, Io is just hanging out in Damage Control's locker room, and Sane and Kai return from the match, and Sky just destroys the office.
She's sick of them losing so much.
Yeah.
She's sick of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why wasn't she up there with them?
Well, it wasn't her match.
It wasn't Dakota Kai's match.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, she has no one to blame but herself. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they are building a story now, seemingly of dissent between Io Sky and perhaps the rest of the members of Damage Control. Or, like, whatever. You sense some form of transformation or some form of storyline is coming here within the members of Damage Control. And I'm glad to see them actually do it because it's been difficult, clearly, for them to present stories for their non-English speaking talent. Io Sky throughout her entire championship reign never really felt to me like she had a substantial story. She always just kind of felt to me like the person holding the belt that the other person was going to do their story off of. So I'm glad to see a story that's now actually being centered around Io. So I'm intrigued to see where it goes.
Then we go to Rey Mysterio with Dragon Lee and Zelina Vega against Carlito. The blood feud has come to a boil. The Savannah Bananas are in the front row, and Carlito drives Ray into the corner and hits a baseball slide dropkick and then slides into the post. That sets up the commercial. Carlito's in control until Ray hits a seated senton and cabrata. Carlito then catches him on the shoulder, spins him around for a TKO before Carlito's shoulder is sent into the post. This is when Balor attacks Dragon Lee, throws him over the desk, so Ray does a seated senton onto Balor off the apron, shoots Carlito into the rope for a 619, and wins with the slingshot splash in 10 minutes and 24 seconds, although Carlito did escape with his life. Balor attacks and is placed on the desk and Dragon Lee is going to go for a splash off the top when Damian Priest arrives, saving the day for Judgment Day, hits Lee with a razor's edge, and then Ray drops Priest and goes for the 619, but is met with a super kick and South of Heaven. So added to the list of Damian Priest opponents, because next week it's Damian Priest versus Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess outside of, like, you know, Drew being a big pay-per-view match, and obviously Gunther potentially being a big pay-per-view match, he's still going to have a lot of TV defenses. That might be Braun. That's going to be Rey next week. I like the fact that the champion has a lot of, like, you know, people that he's going to face. The match here between Carlito and Rey, I really wasn't all that impressed by. You know, it was a lot slower and less spectacular than the current standard from this roster. And to be honest, like, Carlito has not really shown to me why he's a part of 2024 WWE outside of that, like, I guess, like, what was it, the Rumble? What are we talking about here? Like, was it Backlash last year? Where Backlash he had, like, a really impressive...
That was, yeah, the Puerto Rico show.
He had, like, you know, like, great reaction there. Like, looked good enough doing those spots. But since then, I don't think he's done anything that's been interesting enough to warrant this spot. Maybe part of that is creative, but in ring here against Rey Mysterio, I thought he needed to show a lot more, and I wasn't that impressed.
Yeah, I can't say this was anything too impressive, and it's not like they didn't have time either. Like, they got like a good 10 minutes here. Gable is with Akira Tozawa, said, "I didn't see you in Saudi. I'm sure you had a great excuse for not showing up there." And he said, "I could have used your help, but I lost, and I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed." So Braun storms past him. He's searching for McDonough, and is followed by Otis, and who Gable describes Goldilocks and her three brain cells in reference to Maxine, and warns Maxine not to come out there with him tonight. And Otis has a chance to redeem himself after costing him the IC title on Saturday. So Bronson Reed takes on Otis, and Otis is firing back with shots. There were a few Otis chants, and then there's a flying crossbody and an avalanche. And Gable warns him not to do the caterpillar as he's on the apron. Otis turns around after the distraction from Gable. Super kick, senton, tsunami in 3 minutes and 37 seconds as Reed wins. And yes, we also got this tail of the tape.
Yeah, which they tend to reserve for, like, you know, the meat matches of guys that are really big. Do you think these are legitimate stats? 5'10", 6'10", 330 pounds, 24-inch neck.
I'd imagine these are exaggerated numbers. That would be my thought here. I mean, wingspan. Those aren't crazy numbers.
Yeah, I could believe this, especially 5'10". Like, usually you'd probably like, you know, inflate that one if you're going to inflate anything.
Yeah, I've been near Otis. I don't know if he's quite 5'10", but he could be. That might not be too exaggerated. Reed was. I've stood right next to Reed. I would say Reed, like, he was about my height, and I'm 6 feet, so the heights might have been fairly accurate. And,
interesting.
There we go.
What's your bench press?
Their necks. Six.
Versus like 6 pounds?
Half that, yeah.
Impressive, yes.
So Gable tells Otis to come back out here after the loss, and he calls out Maxine and Tozawa for a meeting. And he blames Otis for costing him the match on Saturday. "You blew it tonight too. And what you're missing is discipline." And he's going to show him discipline, and he takes off his belt. And Otis is told to grab the rope, and he's going to whip Otis when Maxine stops Gable, and she is sent to the back as Gable mocks her and goes to whip him. When Sami Zayn comes out, he checks on Maxine on her way to the back, and Gable warns Zayn, "Do not enter this ring." Zayn says, "You, Gable, are a weak little man. You manipulated your way into multiple title shots, and each time you came up short, G." He says that he can't get the job done. It's no one else's fault but yours. And Gable refers to Otis as this idiot as Zayn takes the belt from Gable, and Otis then stands up to Zayn, and once again, Zayn gives a speech to Otis to stop listening to Gable, start listening to the people. And then Gable attacks Zayn. He tries to fight back, and Otis pulls Zayn off, and it leads to a German suplex by Gable. Now the crowd is all chanting for Otis as Zayn gets laid out with punches from Gable, and Otis reluctantly leaves with Gable. I thought this was a very good angle afterward that they did here and continuing to bring this to a boil with Otis of when he is finally going to snap on Chad Gable. And they're milking it for that big reaction and continuing it here.
I thought also it was really well done. I mean, this is the most over Otis has been since the Mandy Rose days. And the man hasn't had to speak more than five words in this entire program to achieve this. So it's more of a testament, I think, to the great job everybody else is doing in addition to what Otis is providing as well. But I'm namely talking about Gable. I'm talking about Sami Zayn. I'm talking about Maxine, too. I think she's done a great job. This is a very good role for Sami Zayn to, like, showcase his, like, very strong babyface promo. He reminds me so much of, like, Mick Foley when he speaks as a babyface and just, like, comes up with so much, like, relatable passion. When it's just Otis and Gable in these sort of segments, like, it does still feel kind of, like, almost, like, comedic to me. But when Sami comes in, he's so committed and he's so good at sounding serious that he's able to make me take the angle seriously. So the end result of all of this is Otis potentially being an elevated star. How far they can go with that, I do have my doubts about Otis's ceiling, but I hope Sami Zayn along the way can, you know, reach a higher platform as well.
Yeah, it's one where sometimes we talk about, I hope they have a great follow-up. I'm sure they do. It's just, for me, this is the money portion. It's the tease, because once Otis and Tozawa break away, I don't know what the post run is like for them once they're away from Gable as well. Because we sort of saw them try with Otis as that singles run years ago with the Money in the Bank, and it really did not take. It was almost as though the audience, they really liked this guy, but to a point. And that's the same here. I don't know if they would accept him higher than this kind of a level.
I wonder if they would have him paired with Sami to take on the Creeds with Gable, you know, like in sort of like a new faction, you know, war of the two. I don't know if I ever see Otis as, like, you know, a standalone, like, world title contender sort of guy, but as somebody who could support and play heavy or sidekick next to, like, a Sami Zayn, for instance, there's potential.
There was a video on Liv Morgan and her return from injury, the revenge tour, and her ultimate goal of taking out Rhea Ripley. So Kathy Kelly speaks with Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark, who are the number one contenders for the tag titles, and they know that they can beat Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill, and maybe they're going to invite them to Raw next week to meet. So Sonya Deville enters stating, "You need my help to win the titles," and says how the locker room doesn't respect you. And Baszler goes over all that she's done and threatens Deville of injuring her knee again. So they turn around and they run into Isla Dawn and Elba Fire, who bring up, "You've never beaten us." Finally.
Have they ever heard of them is a better question.
Way, we are finally going to get this match that we have been coveting for so long. The Baszler Stark versus Fire and Dawn showdown. It's happening, folks. And as they walk away, Deville returns stating, repeats her point that the locker room does not respect you. So yeah, this is before they get to those tag titles, this is the obstacle.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, they got on TV. You know, that's already way better than what they had on SmackDown.
And they did put up a key to make sure you know who these people are.
I'm interested in seeing, like, what Sonya does with the group. I already kind of like the interactions, you know. And Shayna and Zoe are clearly playing hard to get.
SmackDown on Friday will have Nia Jax's coronation, and Cody Rhodes will appear on the show. And then next week on Raw, Sheamus against Kaiser, New Day against AOP, and Damian Priest against Rey Mysterio. That I feel is just non-title. Liv Morgan, Becky Lynch, steel cage match for the women's world title is the main event. I don't know about you. I thought there was so little heat for this match. I thought that there was, this was not a hot crowd, but especially for this match, which was the big match of the show. I just felt like this audience was really checked out of this for the whole time.
I don't disagree. No. And it felt more because of the match itself, and maybe due to, I don't know, just the crowd itself. But, like, for me, I think, I don't know if the wrestling ever did anything to give them a bigger reason to get
all these
there.
Fans were asking, where's the barbed wire?
That's it. Yes. clearly.
So
where is the flamethrower?
Yeah, this is pretty calm stuff.
Yeah.
So they came back from the break. Liv was climbing. Becky stops her with a superplex, tries for the disarmer, and she gets driven into the cage, and then Liv pops off the rope with a codebreaker. Both end up seated on the cage, and Liv ends up powerbombing her for a two count, tries for the oblivion. It's blocked, and Becky applies the disarmer while in the ropes, which Liv breaks. Dominic runs down, and he opens up the door. Like, no... no security here to stop him. He opens the door, and Balor and JD run down, and they're afraid Dom is going to screw up again. And they get followed by Braun Strowman, who, I mean, if Eddie Kingston could have the recovery skills of Braun Strowman, he'd be in a... He just ran down. He ran down.
He was selling throughout the entire evening. Like you saw in the back, he was hobbling. And by this
point, by the time he ran around this ring, he seemed to be... He was on the mend. He was okay.
Yeah, he had time to recover. Maybe he iced it.
Could have. So Dominic is... Strowman chases them around the ring. And as he passes by Dominic, he knocks Dominic into the cage door, which in turn nails Becky. So Becky is out, allowing Liv to escape at 13 minutes and 17 seconds as Cole yells, "That damn Dominic!" And Liv Morgan retains the title. Dominic is looking all upset in the on the aisle when Liv walks by, stares at Dom, and then makes out with Dominic, who is not reciprocating here. So you're left with the idea if Dom wanted this.
But he's not exactly pushed, like he could have easily pushed her away. And in fact, after she let go, like Dom just kind of gave a look like he was accepting it. So I would say like it felt pretty clear that like Dom was...
I think this was left to be more ambiguous. It's not like he smiled. It's not like this was like the reveal of a big plan. I mean, look at this guy in the front row. I mean, he didn't...
I kind of did feel this is more of a question of consent at this point. You know, I think that we could...
is that the question here. I think you're going to have Dom denying this is going to end up with these two together. But I think that is a further chapter of this down the road.
Yeah.
You're gonna deniability here from Dom.
They clearly had a lot of subtext they had to convey in these looks, and even just like in the aftermath and the response of this kiss. And clearly, if it's up to debate even between you and I, then I think they probably nailed it. The match that preceded this, I unfortunately didn't think it was any good. You know, I kind of found it boring. Not much going on, not much drama built, not much memorable, period. But I did really like the way that things closed here with them blending the show-long storyline of Braun Strowman looking for JD directly into the finish of this match, which I actually thought was really, really well done. And then obviously ending with this cliffhanger, which in the chat room, I'm seeing a few people mention that USA, because of the overrun, might have actually cut it off for some people. So that would be unfortunate.
Oh, and they didn't see the kiss?
Yeah, at least that's what some people are saying in the chat room.
Oh, well, that's like the big thing on the show that they missed. That was not well timed. I mean, look at this guy in the front row. Like, he is in shock. Like, what am I seeing here? Poor Rhea. So anyway, that was the show. I thought this was a pretty ho-hum edition of Raw. I thought wrestling wise, I enjoyed the Ricochet Ilya match, and that was the one match I really enjoyed on this show. You did have several angles and such. I thought that the closing angle, it's good to go off with a cliffhanger like that. The Gable segment with Otis was very strong as well. But I thought overall, I thought the main event was very disappointing. And the crowd heat was not that strong on this show. It sort of just felt to me like a weaker edition of Raw, but not without its positives on the show, too. There were some, just more spread out.
Yeah, in ring, it was probably a weaker edition of the show. But I thought like the storyline stuff that they did was all pretty good. Like Priest at this point has several programs going on. And I think... for the most part, like the Gunther match, I'm compelled by after seeing today's segment. I think the Drew segment is being built really well. Plus, he's got other challenges. I thought that the Rey Mysterio TV match, I think, was being built really well. I felt this was a good reintroduction for Braun Strowman into the main roster. And they're continuing to, you know, like, I really do feel like this portion of the WWE is the rebuilding phase where they're giving a lot more spotlight to new guys. And you're seeing that in a Braun Strowman. You're seeing that in Liv Morgan. You know, that's clearly, you know, already somebody that they've managed to escalate to a higher level just within a month. They're doing that with Braun Breaker. They're doing that with Ilya Dragunov. I think they're doing that with Ricochet as well. So just like the totality of like the people that they're trying to elevate right now, with the exit potentially of a Becky Lynch, with the exit of a Seth Rollins and, you know, Cody off of this show, and just like a bunch of other people, like it feels like it's being effectively refreshed right now.
So the report from Fightful on Monday was that as of Monday morning, Becky Lynch and WWE had not reached terms on a new contract, though the two sides had been in contact. And it goes on to state, we have not learned if a deal is imminent or agreed upon. Outside of that, there hasn't been a new deal reached. We have also not learned on whether it has any bearing on tonight's match. Lynch's current contract is set to expire June the 1st, at which point she'll become a free agent unless a deal is reached before then. Lynch is expected by many in the industry to get the biggest offer of any woman in pro wrestling history.
And if we go to Twitter, Becky Lynch has responded somewhat cryptically with a photo of her leaving, saying simply the caption, "to be continued." So whatever that means.
Okay. Well, that is Monday's edition of Raw. And we will open it up to any feedback you have got. If you want to send in a super chat, you can do so. And we will also go to the forum where we can, you can always post your thoughts after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown.
Let's go to forum.postwrestling.com.
Okay. Let us start off with Jeremy in Texas, who starts us, Raw was fine, unless you're a clock. Others may disagree, but I liked how they tied the whole Braun-JD conflict into the finish of the women's title match. With Ricochet likely being the first, I'm curious who else they will end up feeding to Braun with an O. But what is with all these abrupt endings to the show of late? The Liv Dom glance, and apparently Big Angle was cut off. We had the Gunther finish, and then they were out last week. The Rock isn't walking through the door in a while. Who can they blame for all these close calls with time? Others may have seen it, but it's being, but being heavy and missing an angle, being shown to a large portion of the audience is sloppy and not good for business. I mean, it's a problem if you're doing your big angle and you're not hitting your time so that it doesn't air.
You should blame the person in charge. And I guess that would be Paul Levesque in this case. I mean, they do have like a timekeeper, but like it's up to the person up top.
Yeah, like if really this didn't air, like that's just like poor handling of like a live television show. And like, I hate to be that guy. I don't like doing these, but I just imagine what the reaction would be if like AEW got cut off with like their big show closing angle and it didn't air, and the amount of like these amateurs that don't know how to produce television would mm-hmm. that would just dominate the Thursday the discussion. But I totally forgot last week they ran up right to the end there. Like that was you didn't miss anything. It was just an abrupt end. I mean, tonight, like that was a key, you could argue it was the key storyline on the like advancement on the whole show.
Mm-hmm. It was. All right, let's go up next to Brian in New Jersey, who says, I enjoy the opening promo segment and the Alpha Academy segment. I thought the finish to the main event stunk. On USA and the US, the show ended with Dom scowling at Liv, but other audiences got this. Yes, thank you for informing
This is wild. I can't believe that this didn't air. It does tell you that, I mean, for all that we've talked about, like that they used to have the overrun and like it sounds like it's a hard out that they have. Like the USA is not giving them any wiggle room if they're cutting them off to that degree. I mean, it's very surprising. It's not like they went over a significant amount, but clearly, like that's the hard out. And maybe there was some miscommunication. Maybe
they're getting ready for Netflix.
Okay, well, we will see. Jermaine from Chicago. Always good to hear from Jermaine. Raw was okay. I'm having a problem with some of the Hunter finishes to these matches. First, it was terrible Jade and Naya. Okay. Then the ending of the main event tonight was goofy to me, with Braun 2 inches away from the guy he wants to beat up, but runs around the other way to hit Becky with the cage door. I tried to give Damian Priest a chance at being the champion, but he isn't cutting it for me because we know that Seth, Punk, and Drew would all be better at leading a show. I would disagree that you can argue there's a lot of candidates on Raw at the moment that you could, once healthy, that you have a pretty thriving main event scene. But I would not say that Damian is, that I can't say he is rising up in this position. I think his promos have been very good, and that's largely what we've had to judge him on so far. I mean, the one big match he had was Jey Uso in France, which was not, it had an awesome crowd, but I mean, it wasn't here nor there for me. But I would say for 2 months, I think he has elevated himself. I don't find him to be kind of feeling like inferior to this run.
It's natural to, I think, place Damian Priest below a Seth Rollins or CM Punk or Drew McIntyre at this stage of his career. He's really just starting out, and it's almost kind of unfair to, you know, compare him to like those veterans. But at the same time, again, this is a period of the season that is about rebuilding and about building, you know, giving your freedom and airtime and spotlight to somebody like a Damian Priest so that he can eventually become, you know, a Seth Rollins or maybe not a CM Punk. It's hard for me to feel that comparison, but yeah, like, you know, to have him step up. So I don't mind this period where things might not be as strong, and that might require, that is like a valid criticism of like, you know, is the show overall good? And I think it requires maybe that much more supporting cast involvement to be strong at this point as well, while Drew McIntyre, like while Damian Priest gets built. Do you anything more from Jermaine?
He goes on to ask about, he has a question here about why are Braun and Roxanne Perez heels when they seem like lead baby faces before they turn them in NXT. I would say I thought Braun was great as a heel. I think it helped him to have that heel run. I thought he took to it pretty naturally. I think he can play either role effectively. Roxanne Perez is an amazing babyface. She's a good heel. I think it's more so they just want her to have this experience in NXT being a heel. Mm-hmm. Like when they call her up, unless they have some solid reasoning for it, I think she makes so much more sense as a babyface to start off. Like she just has that unique charisma that works really well. I think they just want her to have the experience of being a heel until that time that call up occurs.
We are ultimately talking about NXT still being a developmental program, and you want, you know, your up and coming talents to really kind of get the full experience of what it means to be a pro wrestler, so that by the time they get to the main roster, she's not playing a heel for the first time when it's time for her to turn. I also think it's about, like, for often, especially for baby faces, their real personalities or their sort of like more unique personalities don't really come out until they become heels. So I think this is a very valuable experience, I would say, probably for her right now. Let's go lastly to Muggin, who says, once was by chance, twice was a coincidence. Will the third time be a pattern? I guess it will. The cliffhanger left a lot of questions about Liv and Dom potentially being in cahoots. Not going to get into the weeds of whether Becky is staying or going. The cage match was solid, and Liv is the wedge to drive Judgment Day apart. The Alpha Academy saga puts more sympathy on Otis, and Bron Breakker continues to shit where he eats. Ilya, I don't know if that's what that saying means.
Yeah, not quite.
I mean, I think he is doing the other thing too, but not on the main roster, I guess. He says, Ilya Ricochet was another good one until the DQ. It's looking like a hot summer.
Okay. Well, thank you, Muggin. Last thing, what did you think about just in terms of the setup of doing Drew and Priest and the way they're setting this up? Like, obviously, they are not at all trying to fight this crowd or anything. Like, they are going for Drew as the patriotic babyface in Scotland, and they want this atmosphere to be like that Priest is in enemy territory. Like the way they've set this up, do you like the way that it's been positioned?
Yeah, obviously it's going to be ramped up that much more. And, you know, even up until we get to Clash of the Castle, I don't know how distinct of a heel, like, turn you're going to get out of Damian Priest in the sort of temporary. He's still on screen in these, you know, North American-based shows, a babyface, but he's going to be entering enemy territory. And I think that's how they're going to frame it. At this point in the WWE, they're really kind of no strangers to presenting that sort of, you know, atmosphere. For a one night pivot, so, you know, that still works for their overall storylines once they leave.
I think what they need to do for this main event, everyone is going to think of like the run in potential for a CM Punk, which of course you could do. It's expected. Mm-hmm. To me, I'm piggybacking off WrestleMania. And the week of, they announce CM Punk will be on commentary for the match. And Drew has to be able to overcome his ego that cost him the title at WrestleMania with CM Punk ringside in his home, in Drew's home country, to win this title and not have CM Punk caught, like, he just, his ego costs him in his home country.
I think that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. So maybe that is something that they will try. Okay. That's it for Rewind to Raw. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. Tuesday night, you're going to be hearing from Braden and Davey after NXT. Wednesday, we've got Pollock and Thurston at 3 Eastern, and then Wei and I will check back with you after Dynamite at the Kia Forum on Wednesday night. So, Wei, I will miss talking to you on Tuesday.
You can come over. We can hang out.
We could, yeah, maybe. Actually, we're gonna hang out later this week in person.
That's a no. See, these are empty words here. He wants his time for me more away from me more than he's letting on. Yes, we will hang out on Thursday, and we will also be hanging out along with our friends at the BDE, along with all of you, hopefully, in Toronto at Yuck Yucks Comedy Club, 224 Richmond Street West, July the 6th. Tickets available now. Postwrestling.com/live.
Yes, it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll be doing, Davey and Braden will be concocting games, wrestling themed drinks, wrestling improv. Wei and I will be doing a live Q&A on the stage, and we hope to get to meet many of you at this first, and maybe the first of many, cash-ins here in Toronto. So, a great name, by the way.
It took a focus group to find it.
It did. Postwrestling.com/live. Grab your tickets now, and we will speak with you later this week.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.